Wholesaling Studios, powered by RumbleOn.com. It's time to get all the info you need on the Vanderbilt Commodores. This is the Anchor Down Podcast with Vanderbilt reporter Max Herz.
Yeah, that's a good way of putting it, Max.
On Nashville's best sports talk,
ESPN
102.5 The Game.
And the Game Nashville app.
It's time to anchor down and listen up to the Anchor Down Podcast here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. It is Monday, March the 1st. Feels a little bit more natural to be talking about baseball in the month of March, doesn't it? We got our first series recap podcast here. We talk Vanderbilt baseball year-round here on the Anchor Down Podcast. My name is Max Herz. I'm your host. Vanderbilt takes 3 of 4 from Georgia State over the weekend to finish off what was a pretty crazy week. The first 7 games of the season end up coming in a 7-day span because of snow and ice pushing back the Wright State series, moving it down from 3 games to 2. So it was Monday, Monday, Wednesday, Friday, Saturday, Sunday, Sunday with a scheduled doubleheader against Georgia State to finish up the week. So Vanderbilt is now 6-1 on the season. They're number 2 in the D1 baseball poll if you are interested in some early season rankings. They're in the top 5 in all the national polls still. And they lost for the first time on Friday night against Georgia State. Lost a close one, 4-2. Bounced back with a 1-run win on Saturday, 5-4. And then by the time you get to Sunday, it's doubleheader blowout day. So Vandy takes 3 of 4 against Georgia State. They were 2-0 against Wright State, beat Western Kentucky in the midweek, so here they are at 6-1. Let's talk about it, shall we? Vandy probably not going to lose many Friday night games once they get their rotation back on track. And by back on track, I mean literally back on track, back on schedule. It's not like anybody's pitching poorly. The Friday night guys are just pitching at the end of the series. Kamar Rocker and Jack Leiter pitched in the openers on Monday. They come back on 5 days of rest, which is 1 day shorter of rest than usual. Usually you just go once a week at the college level. They both come back for another doubleheader together again on Sunday. So that means Thomas Schultz, the number 3 starter, starting game 1 of the 4-game series on Friday. And then one of the piggybackers, as Tim Corbin and Scott Brown call them, Sam Loboke, gets the chance to make his first collegiate start on Saturday. So a little bit of a backwards weekend in general. You'll often see Vanderbilt, and this happens in regionals too, I mean, this happens in the NCAA postseason when Power 5 teams take on teams that are trying to pull big upsets and just don't have the depth. By the end of the weekend, the disparity in talent on the pitching staff is very obvious. That was the case this weekend as Georgia State had to go back through arms a second time. But a big part of it was Vanderbilt's 2 best pitchers pitched those last 2 games. So not only was depth showing, but the 2 aces were going. As we go back to Friday, Vandy struggled offensively in this game. Just 8 hits, 2 runs. One of those runs and 3 of those hits came in the 9th inning. So through 8 innings, they had just 1 run on 5 hits, trailed 4-1, never led in the game. They had not trailed through the first 3 games, and then in game number 4, they did not lead. Here's what Tim Corbin said that Georgia State pitching, led by starter Ryan Watson, who went 5 full, followed by 4 relievers, did well against the Vandy lineup and why the Commodore bats struggled.
Well, I think it was a decel in the counts. You know, they were cross-counting us really, really well in 2-0, 2-1, 3-1. And that's where our inexperience showed tonight. They were able to do that. And then when they did throw a fastball, we were too big with our swings. We weren't able to get the barrel to the ball. We didn't stay in the middle of the field, which you have to against a team like this. I don't think they're going to change anything from today to tomorrow, but their pitchers did a good job. They came in here and executed comfortably and shut us down.
Georgia State pitching cross-counted Vanderbilt's batting order, Tim Corbin says Friday night in a game the Panthers won 4-2 at Hawkins Field for Vandy's first baseball loss of the season, dropped them to 3-1 at the time. A lot of off-speed pitches and fastball counts, and the hitters were not timing them up well. And then when the fastballs came, they're getting too big with their swings, Tim Corbin says. Swinging for the fences. There was a lot of that late in the game when guys were up as the tying or even at the very end of the game, the winning run. So some overswinging going on. I think that really was corrected the rest of the weekend. I really do. And that's why Vanderbilt's able to win the next three. On the pitching side Friday night, I did not think Thomas Schultz was impressive in this outing. This was, to me, the worst collegiate outing he has had. And again, a short collegiate career as he's a sophomore coming off a shortened COVID season. But he got a chance to start a game as a spot starter last year, actually 1 year ago today on February the 29th of 2020, as we record here on March the 1st. So I'll count that as a year ago today. Why not? And he went five innings. I mean, he was called upon. He didn't overthink it. He gave up one run. And then in this start on Friday night, second weekend of the year, guy who knew he was going to be in the rotation to start the season and just didn't get a chance the first week because they only played two games. Only 4 1/3, 75 pitches, 4 hits, 2 runs. Both of them were earned, 2 walks, 4 strikeouts. And just 57% of his pitches were strikes. His command wasn't very good. And that's the first time I can really say that about Thomas Schultz in game action. Left down 2-1, Nick Maldonado was good right after him, able to induce a double play, strand the two inherited runners he took from Schultz to end the fifth, and then a 1-2-3-6. So he really put out that fire. And then Patrick Riley, who had just made his college debut 2 days earlier, comes back, which was good to see that they're trusting him in short bursts with just 1 day in between. Freshman impact arm. And we talked about on the last podcast that came out Thursday, which I recorded at, I think, 11:15 at night, and I was half asleep. Hopefully I sound a little bit more alert today, Monday at 5:15 after the series, recording right around our normal time. If you go back and listen to that podcast that I honestly may have been asleep during, so sorry if I said anything stupid, talked about how those five Commodore freshmen who debuted in the game prior to this Georgia State series on Wednesday against Western Kentucky are the five freshmen who they think can be impact guys out of the bullpen or starting. Christian Little started the game. He's probably a starter most of the year. Hunter Owen came out of the bullpen for the fourth and the fifth. He's a potential starter. Then relievers Miles Garrett, Grayson Moore, and Pat Riley. So Riley comes right back on Friday. We did see all five of those guys again over the weekend, which is good. I mean, they're going. They're regulars. That was game number three, and they got their first touches. And now through seven games, they've all thrown twice. So that's what Vandy wants. Then Ethan Smith in the ninth inning, trying to preserve a one-run deficit and get to the bottom of the ninth down just a run with the top of the order coming up for the Commodores. And oh, by the way, they did score exactly one run in that inning. Obviously, if it was 2-1, things are probably different and it doesn't play out exactly the same. But just for factual purposes, Smith gave up a 2-run home run. Elian Marejo took a hanging curveball and dropped it on top of the monster. And that was after Griffin Chaney doubled past third base to start the inning. So back-to-back hits allowed by Smith. He also allowed a single with one out in the inning before striking out the 7 and 8 guys to get it to the bottom of the ninth at 4-1. Vandy scores one in the bottom, but that was all they got. And Georgia State won. Pretty crazy moment at the end of the game. It was raining towards the last inning, maybe inning and a half or so. And on the final out of the game, CJ Rodriguez was batting in the game for the first time because Max Romero caught. He walked to lead off the eighth inning with a one-run deficit. They pinch ran for him, which is the correct move. And then Rodriguez comes in relief. First time Vandy has switched between their two primary catchers mid-game. We've seen Alan Espinal come in for mop-up duty, but the first time that either Romero or Rodriguez has been subbed out and the other has replaced him in a close game situation. So Rodriguez comes to bat for the first time in the game, goes down 1-2. It's first and second with two outs, down 4-2, bottom of the ninth inning. Rodriguez pops one up to right center. Kyle Rieselman's the center fielder. He is their best outfield defender. He's looking up into the rain. He cannot see it. And he finally tracks it down in right center field. And I don't think he really called the ball. Or if he did, it was very late because the right fielder, Dalton Pearson, ended up right in the same spot and his glove was right under his. I thought they were either going to collide and knock the ball out or one of them was going to get it and steal it from the other guy. And the latter is what happened. Somebody caught it, and Georgia State won. So a huge win for Georgia State, and they had a chance to win on Saturday, too. We'll take a break, come back, and talk about it. This is Max Herz talking Vandy Boys Baseball. You're anchoring down and listening up with me here on 102.5 The Game. Subscribe to the Anchor Down podcast on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google Podcasts, and Stitcher.
Fans, it's time for the Anchor Down podcast with Max Herz. Anchor Down!
Oh. Estoy aquí porque Dios tuvo planes conmigo.
Welcome back to the Anchor Down Podcast here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. My name is Max Herz, recapping Vanderbilt's 3-1 baseball series win over the Georgia State Panthers in week two of the college baseball season. You're on the podcast. If you don't already, you can subscribe to the Anchor Down Podcast for free, and you can listen anytime on demand by searching us on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, and Stitcher. Georgia State took the first game of the series. Big surprise. Panthers out of the Sun Belt, coming up to Nashville and winning game number 1-4-2. And then Saturday, it was tight again. Vandy got out to a quick 4-0 lead as Dom Keegan stayed hot with a long home run to right center field. He hit his first collegiate home run on Wednesday onto the walkway behind center field, just to the left field side of center near the batter's eye. And then on Saturday, in his first AB, two games later, he goes opposite field, and Keegan, a right-handed hitter, is really a middle-of-the-field guy. He wants every ball he hits to go to the middle of the field. And then he says, if I'm early, it gets pulled. And conversely, if it's late, as we saw in the homer, it goes the other way. And he's got power everywhere. Vandy went opposite field a few times. We'll talk about that when we get to Sunday's doubleheader and Parker Nolan's first collegiate homer. Vandy added a couple more in the bottom of the second inning on some walks, free bases, and a bunt single in the middle of it to load him up with nobody out by Enrique Bradfield Jr., who is off to a very strong start in his collegiate career. He started every game in center field for Vandy through the first seven, hitting in the ace spot in the batting order through all of them as well. 7 out of 20 with 6 runs scored and 4 for 4 stealing bases, 5 walks and 2 hit-by-pitches compared to just 5 strikeouts. His on-base percentage is .519. Through 27 trips to the plate, actually make it 28. 28 plate appearances. He's been on 15 times. Very impressive for Enrique Bradfield. I talked to Enrique heading into the Georgia State series, got a chance to interview him for the first time over the phone. Of course, can't really interview anybody in person right now. And as you heard the Tim Corbin quotes throughout the podcast today, they are recorded by a recorder sitting next to a computer through Zoom. So nothing we can really do about it, but the audio is not quite the quality that we would normally have it as for post-game baseball interviews on the podcast, but that's the best I've got for now. So for you audio nerds out there, that's the method to the madness here. But I asked Enrique Bradfield about his speed, and I love this answer. This is Bradfield heading into the series, and I mean, this man is just taking free bases left and right.
In terms of base stealing, what aspect of it do you think you're best at right now, and what are you still working on?
I'm working on my jumps. That's something that we spend a lot of time working on here. Just getting out there, being confident. I feel like my confidence has jumped a great amount since I've been here, to be able to get on and just run, and run until they can stop me.
Run until they can stop me. And he showed that stretching a single into a double Wednesday against Western Kentucky. And then against Georgia State, not only did he have the bunt hits, which Georgia State tried to defend in a crazy way. They brought the second baseman on the edge of the infield green in and then put the shortstop kind of straight up the middle, Rover style. I understand the second baseman being there. I'm cool with that. I don't really know what the shortstop is trying to prevent. But I've also, and this is way too specific baseball defensive thinking stuff, I don't think the shortstop playing directly behind the pitcher gets as much as these teams think it does. I think the pitcher, especially if he knows there's nobody there, is capable of knocking more baseballs down than these teams would like them to be knocking down. But I wasn't sure about where the shortstop was there, and he still got a bunt single around it. So interesting stuff from Georgia State. It's kind of the new J.J. Bleda four-man outfield 2019 postseason. Is it working? Well, he's making outs. But is it because of the alignment? Probably not. So who knows? And the sample size is never going to be big enough with any of these in just 3-game series for us to really know. But I love what Bradfield had to say. I'm going to run until they can stop me. And then also on steals, he's working on getting bigger jumps. And that's something that requires coaching. That's something that requires strategy. And in a Vanderbilt program, and Andrew and I talked about this on the broadcast this weekend on SEC Network Plus, there's a lot of freedom to run. The majority of the steals, especially the straight steals, are not going to be called by the coaching staff. It's the player going on their own. Hit and runs will always be called. Some straight steals will be called. But a lot of that is just the player. Everybody's got the trust. Everybody can go in situations where they think they can make it. And you just got to know your own speed. You got to be realistic. And Bradfield's been working on get better jumps. That's something that he probably hadn't had as much direct coaching on. And once you get the jump down, then you really got the green light to go. And starting Saturday in the final three games of the series, Bradfield stole a base in all three games. He's 4-for-4 on the season. So he'd only tried once through the first four games and then stole one each in games 5, 6, and 7. So Vandy led it 4-1 after four innings. Sam Loboke pitched 4 full. I thought he was strong in his first collegiate start. He's very valuable to Vandy in a lot of roles. His control was great, didn't walk anybody. 4 hits, a run, 7 strikeouts. He's trained as both a piggyback guy and a starter, so he's a multi-inning reliever. First guy out of the pen can take you all the way from the 5th to the 9th, or he can start, take you 1-4, 1-5. So I liked what Loboke did, gave up a solo homer for the only run allowed. D'Angelo Abood hit it, the shorter second baseman at the bottom of the lineup. I thought he had a very good weekend offensively, had some good stuff on defense as well. Speaking of defense, Vandy had some trouble defensively in the top of the 7th, and Georgia State got 3 to tie it. It was 4-4 at the 7th inning stretch, and Vandy had a couple of bunt misplays on the infield, which Tim Corbin, after the win, was a little reflective on. Wasn't quite as disappointed as I would have expected. And by the way, when you heard him in the first segment talk about the cross counting, he wasn't too torn up after that first loss of the season ever either. So it's early season. It's early season, and Tim Corbin taking a calmer approach to it all. But here he is talking about the couple of bunt misplays that got Georgia State moving. Jason Gonzalez picked up a sack bunt, or what would have been a sack bunt. Probably a bunt for a hit. Not sure of Jonathan Ponder's exact intention, but Gonzalez picked it up, airmailed first base, caused a couple of free bases, and then a safety squeeze play, which the pitcher Chris McIlvain came off the mound and could not make a play on.
Well, we just take great pride in playing defense. We spend a lot of time on it, really, and I just think in Gonzo's situation, he probably just should have held onto the ball because there wasn't a play at first base. And that was Ponder, I think, and that's really good speed going down the first baseline. And then the safety squeeze situation was just a misfire. We had the play in front of us. If he fields it cleanly and tosses it, I feel like we have an out.
Yeah.
But well, that's what happens with college kids. That's what makes it interesting sometimes.
That's what makes it interesting. So Tim Corbin seeing the positive side of the folks who determine his success rate being 18 to 22-year-olds, and he always loves to mention their age in positive and negative contexts. So that's what makes it interesting. But a couple of misplayed bunts on the infield. There was a wild pitch in that inning, some productive outs, a single to the outfield as well. All in all, 3 runs, 3 hits, 2 errors, 2 men left on in the top of the 7th inning Saturday for Georgia State that made it 4-4. The one aspect of that I was disappointed in, so Chris McIlvain was on the mound for all of that, and I mean, you can't really fault him for the batted ball results of a lot of this. The ball was just bouncing around the infield. The wild pitch, I mean, that's on him. And then the bunt misplay, which was him coming off the mound and the runner coming home from third, it was a safety squeeze. You got to get a tag play at the plate. McIlvain's a right-handed pitcher. The bunt was to the first base side of the mound and not too far away, so that was in favor of his momentum. If you ask Chris McIlvain, where do you want somebody to bunt a ball on you if you got to make a play at the plate, other than tapping it right in front of the plate, which is the obvious answer, he would want it there. So it was the direction he was falling off in, and also, I could make the case that Chris McIlvain is Vanderbilt's best fielding pitcher. He was a high school catcher. He's used to picking balls up in that area of the field. He's a position player. He played infield too. So he's the type of guy you want fielding that ball. So that was an unfortunate mistake to see there. 4-4, and then bottom 7, Carter Young, first college homer, leading off the inning, got ahead 3-1 facing a new pitcher. They turned him around to bat right-handed. Dawson Sweat was the man on the bump, and Young went yard just to the right of the monster in the part that used to be kind of a triangular cutout, and the old cutout may have kept this one in, but now there's a little more room down there as the monster drops straight down instead of going diagonally and down to the right to meet the main lower fence. So Young, a beneficiary of the renovation that took place a couple of years before he was here, I think it might have gotten out anyway, though, and he hit it hard. I mean, the right side is his natural side, and I talked about this during the game on Sunday. He's a natural right-handed hitter, switch hitter now. He thinks he has better contact on his natural right side and better power on the left. So that was the contact style home run that he lined out hitting right-handed. And then, of course, he absolutely launched one hitting left-handed in the next game on Sunday for his second college homer after he didn't have a chance to hit one last year. So from there, it's the Luke Murphy show. Mentioned that Murphy pitched an inning in the first game, comes back out pitching for the second day in a row, first time he's ever done that. And then another first, he went two innings, six up, six down. The only bad news, they put the ball in play against him four times. God, we just got to be picky on Luke Murphy. He's been great this year. This might be a hot take. Team MVP so far this season? I think there's a pretty good argument that it's Luke Murphy. Here's Tim Corbin talking about him going two innings for the first time as a college player, the eighth and the ninth to close out a one-run win.
Yeah, well, I think, you know, it just depends. I mean, we were in a situation today where he got a quick first inning, so we just wanted to keep him rolling. And the thing that he does is he charges the glove. He gets the ball to the glove, and I think if they're going to beat him, they're going to have to beat him. They're going to have to earn their way on, which is fair. You just don't want, you know, to beat yourself. But I thought he was the right guy at the right time. I don't know if we can bring him back again tomorrow, but he certainly trains to put himself in those situations, so we'll see.
A short eighth inning, just seven pitches for three outs, all balls put in play. Then he came back to strike out the final two guys after, again, four balls put in play against Luke Murphy. Come on, Murph. Settle it down. I mean, he was unbelievable in his first two outings. The first six outs he recorded across those first two appearances, all via the strikeout. Unbelievable. He walked one guy. Other than that, that's all against him so far this year. He has not allowed a hit in four innings. He's faced 13 batters. He struck out eight of them. And this is in comparison to last year, where as a redshirt freshman in his first season back from Tommy John, he faced 18 batters and he walked nine of them, recorded six outs. So he has already recorded twice as many outs as he did last year, has not faced as many batters, and has not walked anybody. And you heard Tim Corbin say it. He charges the glove, and he's going to win really more often than not as long as he isn't beating himself. And he has not so far this season. He has been a very valuable late-inning piece for the Commodores so far here in 2021. I want to thank Simon Gibbs, by the way, from the Vanderbilt Hustler for sending that audio. You heard Coach Tim Corbin addressing Simon by name in those answers. He was the only one in the press conference Saturday. Everybody else was involved in basketball, and I am on our TV production crew for the men's basketball games running the scorebug graphic on ESPN, so I was not able to be in that press conference Saturday. So thank you so much to Simon for not only sending me that audio so you could hear it, but also asking some good questions that are not only coming up here, but came up on the broadcast as well. One other thing that Simon asked that I was curious about, Jack Bolger was 0-for-4 in that game. Ever since Cooper Davis broke his nose, and Davis could return as soon as next Friday against UIC, which is the next time Vandy will play, no midweek game this week after four over the weekend. It's been Jack Bolger in the leadoff spot in left field every game, and his numbers haven't been amazing. The balls haven't been falling for him. The batted ball luck has not been in his favor. Bolger threw seven games. I mean, he pinch hit in the first AB of the season, literally leading off Vanderbilt's first offensive inning. Cooper Davis broke his nose, hitting himself with a foul ball. As Vandy's main left fielder since then, Bolger is just 5 out of 27. He's hitting 185, four walks, four strikeouts, so a 290 on base percentage. But he has hit the ball well, at least to the eye test, and Tim Corbin agrees.
No, I think Jack's in a good place right now. I like the way he's swinging the bat. I mean, he had two barrels on his last two at-bats. Hit one in the left field, hit one in the right field. Thought he hit the ball yesterday. I think the thing you see in kids like him is, you know, anytime his approach and the confidence and the passes that he's making at the ball, they're very confident in nature. So I like how he's swinging the bat. I think we'll keep him going. And Cooper comes back and Spencer jumps in the mix, then, you know, we'll have some decisions to make. But until then, these kids need those at-bats.
He wants Jack Bolger to get the at-bats, and if Spencer Jones isn't available, which he isn't, but he did take batting practice Friday, first time he had swung a bat and hit live pitching. It was BP pitching, but first time he'd hit live baseballs off of anything other than just taking dry swings since he had Tommy John surgery in August. So Jones, who is a potential factor at DH, first base, and left field, maybe right field too. could return as just a position player maybe by the end of this month, sometime early or mid-April as well. So he's in play for Vandy. He, of course, will not be pitching this season as he recovers from Tommy John, but he's a lefty-lefty. I mean, he's a lefty thrower and a lefty swinger, so that makes it a little bit easier with the top hand being the hand that's affected, the top hand's elbow by the Tommy John. I actually talked to Ty Duvall about this. Duvall had Tommy John surgery when he was in high school, but he's a right-handed thrower, as you saw him catching for Vandy for 4 years. He throws with his right hand, as catchers do, and he's a lefty hitter. So he's part of a very small sample of high-level baseball players who have had Tommy John surgery on their bottom hitting elbow. And the most famous name that, at least in recent years, has had it and is the same handedness as Duvall, right-handed pitcher, left-handed hitter, is Shohei Ohtani. And he's an elite two-way player, and the LA Angels want to preserve his ability to do both. So right as Ohtani was getting ready to return, I talked to Duvall about it, and it was his junior year. He was 3 years separated from the surgery at that point, and he basically said, like, I couldn't swing correctly when I first got back. Like, it took me multiple months of swinging to just kind of get back to a swing I liked, and it was never the same. So pretty interesting. So Jones has that advantage going in his favor, but he'll be back at some point. The other person I would have liked to see get a start in left, maybe in one end of this doubleheader, but I think Tim Corbin is confident that Jack Bolger, outside of his opening day nine, which has lost Cooper Davis now, he was very confident Bolger was his 10th best hitter, and the positional versatility they've implanted in Bolger, primarily a catcher in high school, played a little bit of third base, and for Vandy has gotten a lot of repetitions in scrimmages at left field where he's been playing in games, and first base. And we've seen him make some mistakes, misjudge some balls, some bad first steps in left field, but Vandy's taking the trade-off for now. Davis expected back soon. The other name I would have wanted to see, as I was building up to, and we did finally see getting at bat in game number 2 of the doubleheader, was Will Duff, who is a sophomore, another guy who is not a natural outfielder. He's a high school shortstop, but played in the outfield a little bit last year, started a couple games as Vandy's DH as a freshman, and I would like to see him get a run, but he's coming back from a hamstring injury, so good to see Will in a game, but I think Davis will be back before he gets a chance to get out in left field. We'll take a break, come back, talk about Vandy's emphatic doubleheader sweep, outscored Georgia State 29-8 in the Twin Bill with Kamar Rocker and Jack Leiter on the mound, sharing an afternoon of ball, the two co-aces for the second time in 7 days, a Leiter-Rocker Twin Bill. We'll tell you how it went down coming up next. I'm Max Herz. This is the Anchor Down Podcast, and you're anchoring down and listening up to 102.5 The Game.
The Anchor Down Podcast is on.
Welcome back to the Anchor Down Podcast here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. My name's Max Herz. It's Monday, March the 1st. Vandy Boys weekend recap after the Commodore baseball team takes 3-4 from Georgia State. And we come back to maybe 2004's greatest hit. Number one spot by Ludacris for a couple of reasons. Kamar Rocker and Jack Leiter, who shared a doubleheader for the second time in a week on Sunday. Vanderbilt swept both of them. Surprise, surprise. They're both coming for that number one spot in the MLB draft in the Pittsburgh Pirates. And if it's not them, it's probably going to be Jordan Lawler, a high school senior who, if he makes it to college, unlikely, but if he makes it to college, is committed to play at Vanderbilt. But they're both coming for that number one spot, and they're pitching against Georgia State, where Ludacris was once a student before leaving college to focus on his music and entertainment career, which I'd say was a good life choice. And also, later on, he became an artist in residence at Georgia State. And I shared this on the broadcast Sunday in hopes of, like, getting more info about what it was like to work with Ludacris as an artist in residence in Atlanta. That would be the coolest thing ever. I mean, he's not just making music. He's involved in the film industry. He's multimedia heavy. So I don't know if he was teaching courses or just kind of, like what an author would be like as an artist in residence. So if anybody out there listening to this podcast knows anyone who went to Georgia State and worked in any capacity with Ludacris, please alert me. I'm very intrigued. Always good to sample the Austin Powers theme song too, so you got to respect that. Well, we called last Wednesday debut day for the Commodores with five freshmen on the mound against Western Kentucky. Can we call Sunday dinger day? Six homers, three in each half of the doubleheader. Vandy won the first game 12-2 and the second one 17-6 on a day where they had no business getting in really any games, let alone two. They started 11. The heavy rain came in the final inning of game number two. Our friends in the northern counties and Sumner and Robertson counties got pelted all day with rain, and Vanderbilt got extremely lucky. I thought they should have started at 9 a.m. just to be safe, but started at 11, got two in, and Tim Corbin said at the end of the day, like, we had no business playing. We had no business getting these in, and they got them both in. So, and they were both long, long games, too. The first game was 3 hours and 28 minutes. The second game was 3 hours and 16 minutes, and that brings us to what I normally conclude with on the show, but it's so relevant here, we're just going to hear it now. The Tim Corbin quote of the week about pace of play in a rainy doubleheader.
And Rocker was trying to get in rhythm today, and which was a rhythmless game in the first game. There wasn't any pace to it whatsoever.
Yeah.
We just probably abused the pace of play committee with that game.
We just probably abused the pace of play committee with that game. And the best part, Tim Corbin is on the pace of play committee. Oh, incredible. Incredible. And I think he might have dropped that just for me, too, because I've asked him about the pace of play committee a couple times. And Doug Stanton, who's one of my favorites, one of my big mentors in the broadcast industry, he produces all of the Vanderbilt baseball games on SEC Plus that you've seen for the duration of SEC Network Plus's lifespan, dating back to 2014-2015 academic year. When I asked Tim Corbin that question, Doug said, how are the pace of play committee meetings, Corbs? Pretty quick? Ba-bum. Incredible. I think I might have dropped that line yesterday, too. We were on air for 7.5 hours. I don't remember half the stuff I said. I did get the Arc Basement jackhammers in, though, so shout out to Arc Basement. If you live in Monroeville, PA, which is basically the Pittsburgh version of Hendersonville, they can refinish your basement. They are also welcome to sponsor the podcast. They did sponsor Troy Leneve's Yinzer Baseball League summer ball team. So shout out to Arc Basement up in Monroeville, PA. Back at the topic at hand, Kamar Rocker and Jack Leiter got to share a doubleheader again. I mean, once in a week is enough of a gift from the baseball gods on Monday afternoon. And then we do it again on Sunday. They moved the doubleheader from Saturday to Sunday. That was Vanderbilt's call, and Georgia State agreed to it so they could keep those guys on schedule. They never want to move them up more than one day at a time. 5 days of rest is fine. That's what they both did, both going from Monday to Sunday this week. And they'll do that again when SEC series are Thursday, Friday, Saturday instead of Friday, Saturday, Sunday, which I think Vandy's got three or four of scheduled this year for national TV. So it's not something they're not going to be asked to do, but the goal is to go week by week and get Rocker, Leiter, and Schultz back in that order. Instead of week one, just Rocker and Leiter on a Monday, they only played two games. And then week two, Schultz, Leboki in a fourth game that is not going to exist again going forward, and then Rocker Leiter on Sunday. Here's how Tim Corbin said the week went with those guys and what the schedule could look like going forward.
It was awkward for sure because you just were forced to do what we had to do to play those games on Monday, so it just knocked them back. But like you said, we'll just take it a week at a time and try to get them, move them a day up. I wanted to just try to get them some rhythm. And Rocker was trying to get in rhythm today, and which was a rhythmless game in the first game. There wasn't any pace to it whatsoever.
Yeah.
We just probably abused the pace of play committee with that game. But I think we'll be able to move them up a day and get them going again maybe Saturday, Sunday.
The Tim Corbin quote of the week resides in that answer, by the way. So hope you enjoyed hearing the quote of the week again. Abuse the pace of play committee. Kills me. He is, again, on the pace of play committee, so I love that. Tim Corbin, after Vandy swept the doubleheader here. Max Herz on the Anchor Down podcast. You're anchoring down and listening up to 102.5 The Game as we recap Vandy's season opening four-game series, and really their season opening week. They played the entire season so far, seven games, in 7 days. So what I think it looks like going forward, UIC next week at home. I imagine Rocker will bump up a day to Saturday. Leiter will stay on Sunday and pitch on regular rest that week, and Thomas Schultz will lead it off Friday again after he pitched Friday this week, so he'll be on regular rest as well. And then for the final non-conference series, two weekends from now at Oklahoma State, which will be a tough challenge. They're in the top 15, so that'll be by far the most challenging team and the best team that Vandy faces in non-conference play. I think you can move them both up a day there, so they're both back on regular rest for SEC play. So my prediction for Oklahoma State would be Rocker, Leiter, Schultz. My UIC prediction is Schultz, Rocker, Leiter, and then Schultz gets the extra rest going into Oklahoma State. Rocker, Leiter, Schultz, and that's where they want it. That's where they want to stick with it, as long as those are the three. There are certainly guys who could supplant Schultz in the number three spot if he has another start like he did on Friday, went 4 1/3, did not have his best control over only 57% strikes like we talked about earlier. So we will see what happens with Schultz. On the offensive side in this game, he scored 29 runs, and these got kind of out of hand. Dominic Keegan was in the middle of all of it. Dating back to the Wednesday game against Western Kentucky, in his last five games, Dom Keegan, Vandy's first baseman, has been on base 16 out of 21 plate appearances. That's unbelievable. And he's got homers in there. He's got doubles. He came into the week without a home run in his collegiate career, and he leaves with three. So three homers, three doubles in there, couple singles, walks, hit by pitches. Keegan was great. He was named the SEC's co-hitter of the week this week, so very much deserved. And he shares that with Wes Clark from South Carolina, which is Vandy's opening SEC opponent starting March the 19th, who has been red hot. I mean, he's been unbelievable. He's like Keegan. He's barely made an out. So two deserving guys sharing that award for sure. Keegan was in the middle of a lot of it. Homers in the first game, Young, Noland, and Colwick. Colwick's first of the season. Parker Nolan's first collegiate home run goes the other way. Lefty drives one out just to the right of the monster. And then Carter Young destroyed one above the right field bleachers, above Blade's bleachers, Thomastown, which it's called now, even though we're missing the folks out there. They've been spotted on the garage, I hear. Hit the Sam Selman MLB flag at the top of the stand. So think the back of the stands, then up a flagpole, and it was still going, but it hit the flag and knocked down. So Carter Young crushed that one hitting lefty after he hit his first collegiate home run hitting righty on Saturday. And then in game number two, Max Romero. First two collegiate hits are both home runs. One out to center field, which the wind carried on out. I mean, he middle of the field, he drove that baby, and the wind helped it get over the wall. And then he destroyed one to right field. Tim Corbin had compared him to Pedro Alvarez in the fall. That's why. Keegan's third homer of the week was a grand slam, the big swing, in that second game. Rocker and Leiter, I thought both were solid, made some strides. Rocker got through a fifth inning, both of them through five scoreless. Rocker got through five, which he did not do last week. He came back out for the fifth, walked two guys, didn't throw a strike in that frame, and that was it. And then Leiter, five scoreless in the second game, a little bit of command issues, four walks for Leiter, but he was able to pitch around it pretty easily. He had his secondary stuff working, which was not the case in start number one. So I think both of them made the small improvements they need, and now they're back on a little bit more of a schedule, know what to expect. And I mean, even with both of them knowing the whole time they're going to pitch on Sunday, who knows if those games happen? I mean, if it's going to pour, what are they going to do? There's a chance one of them or both of them gets skipped, so Vandy should be thankful that both of them have gotten to pitch two full outings with all the weather they've had. So that's been good. That's all the time we've got for today. We'll be back hopefully later this week to preview the series against UIC on Friday. All three games will be fully produced on SEC Network Plus. Commodores are 6-1 to start 2021. And you've been anchoring down and listening up with me, Max Herz. You can subscribe to the Anchor Down podcast on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google Podcasts, and Stitcher. Catch us on demand there and hear us Monday nights from 8 to 9, as many of you just did here on 102.5 The Game.